Pablo Picasso once stated, "We all know that art is not truth. Art is a lie that makes us realise truth." From painting and poetry to symphonies and sculpture, the arts bring beauty and illumination to some, confusion and frustration to others. But what is art? The idea of a work of art, created by an artist, did not truly exist before the Renaissance. And what value do the arts still have? Do they still make us realise the truth, or are they increasingly rarefied and obsolete in this digital, disposable age? With me to discuss the wide spectrum of the arts are Stephen Merchant, graduate of the University of Warwick and award-winning writer.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Carl Pilkington, a man with no qualifications, very little education, but who is now known the world over as a man with a head like a fucking orange.
All right.
Well, I suppose if I can pick up on something from your introduction, Ricky, you pose the question, in a sense, what is art? It's a very broad term.
It's a very difficult one as well. I think the earliest people to ponder it were the Greeks, and I think they thought that art was, and its point, was to try and emulate as close as possible the beauty of nature. So they knew art was a sort of, you know, a quest for beauty, and I suppose they thought nature was pretty perfect in its aesthetic, and so the point of an artist was to try and tap into that.
Well, let me throw that question over to Carl Pilkington.
What do you want to know?
Well, we were just trying to clarify what art is. Ricky's just referring back to the Greeks.
It's just something for your eyes to look at.
Right,
it's just a change from the norm, isn't it? I mean, that's why I think most people have it. But then, the problem is, I'd never buy a piece of art. I don't see the point in buying something, because I know that my eyes will get bored of it eventually.
Right.
So it's better to keep it in a museum, like a lot of places, you know, a lot of museums keep the stuff. They rotate it, because people get sick of looking at it. They shift the art around, don't they? People go, I'm sick of that now. They move it around the world, let someone else's eyes look at it.
Well, that's more to get everyone the chance to see it, as opposed to the people who looked at it once and now sick of it.
Oh, not the shitting Mona Lisa again.
No,
if
but
I have
how
to stare
many times can you look
bitch
at the same thing? I think there's a snobbery with art. I think people do go,
well,
have you seen the new one at the Louvre?
Oh, well, yeah, I think there lovely should be a snobbery with art.
Why?
Because the world is full of idiots. And just because there's not safety in numbers with art. I think you should be a complete fascist when you're creating a work of art. I don't think it is open to utilitarian or democratic referendum.
You end up with the X Factor winner that way.
No, I know, but that pleases the masses. That's what I'm saying. When there was a painting knocking about when I was a kid, right, called The Blue Boy.
Yeah.
Now every house had one, right? Turned out that it was just a bloke who had a load and he was flogging them to everyone. But the thing is, that sums up art to me. Someone's got a load, you want one? Go on then, I've got a wall to fill. And they stick it on. It's not. No, what does that represent?
Well,
what's that going to bring to the room? It's just filling a gap. And that's what art is to me. It's filling a gap that would otherwise have nowt in it.
But you're obsessed with the functionality of things. This is all you're ever obsessed with. What's its function? Things always need to get you from A to Z in some way. And art's not about that.
Have you got much art in your house?
Yes. Yeah. Because it gives me pleasure, and I don't get tired of it, I don't get bored of it.
You look at it every day?
Well, it's there, isn't it? It just adds.
Yeah, but other things are there. Dust is there, but
surprisingly, I've not compared.
I think
art
I've
dust as often as I perhaps should. But the thing about, and this I think may be intriguing to you, Damien Hirst, of course, is more of a conceptual artist like Tracy Emin, and a lot of what contemporary art does is followed on from a guy called Marcel Duchamp, who I'm sure you're familiar with. Now he famously took a gentleman's white urinal like you'd find in a pub toilet, and he put it on its side, and he signed it with a fake name, and he put it in an art gallery. Now he did that in about 1917, perhaps a bit later.
It just annoys me, because there'll be snobby people who haven't got a clue. And they're looking at that and they go, oh yeah, I see what he's trying to say.
Well, that might make them think. They might.
Damien Hirst, I don't feel angry with Damien Hirst, really, because
right,
he's getting away with it.
But why does that annoy you?
Because it's people falling into the trap. Damien Hirst, before he dies, I bet he goes, what a laugh that was. I had everyone on.
There's a very good point as well, because some people think that the greatest art form of the last 100 years is marketing.
Yeah.
Some people say that that is his art, that it's not good enough to do it, you've got to then get away with it. And if art, if the point of art is to inflame, I don't think anything inflames people more than the discussion about whether something's art, or if someone's taking the piss, or if someone gets 50 million for something, do they deserve it? Is it worth a hospital?
Well, what do you think? What do you think of the shark in a tank?
I think I was blown away by it. I thought I'd never seen anything like it before.
It was sort of spectacular because it is so huge and so vast, and to have put a shark, you know, in formaldehyde and to have hung it in an art gallery, it's very striking when you see it.
Yeah,
it's
it
a
is.
Remarkable achievement.
Is he an artist or a fishmonger? What he's done, anyone could have done what he did.
Yes, but not everyone did it. He did it. This is an interesting point that you raise. It's the same old point you always raise. Not anyone could have done it. That's always the same point you make. Anyone could have done it.
Carl,
but they didn't do it.
You could say the same about Michelangelo. Is he an artist or a painter and decorator?
Well, it hasn't caught on, has it? Like the crying boy photograph. No one's having them in their house. No one's gone, oh, have you seen this? Have you seen the new trend? A shark in a tank? No one's got the room. No one wants it. And that, to me, shows you what's popular. At the end of the day, if everyone wants one, he's got to be good, hasn't it?
But I think if people were given a chance to appreciate more sophisticated things, then they would. And I just think that's true in all walks of life. You know, it's an acquired taste. And the best things are an acquired taste. They really are.
Well,
you know, if all you eat is processed cheese and white bread, you get a taste for it. But if you try something that's, you know, in my opinion, better than that, then, you know, you'll leave that behind.
That's pretty rich coming from you.
I know, I love a bit of cheddar, don't I? I'm mother's pride.
Yeah. Whereas if you were to be offered perhaps some calamari, your reaction would be...
Squid, get it out of my face.
Sure, yeah. But I take your point, Rick. Thanks for it anyway.
Calamari was an artist, by the way.
I mean, I haven't got pictures in our flat because of that mirrored wall I've got.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, it's tiny. He's been in it. I've got windows on one wall, door to get in on the other, kitchen on the other, mirrored wall on the other. So there's nowhere there. There's no space for art.
I'm intrigued how you sit at home. Where's the sofa?
At home?
Yeah.
Facing the mirror.
So you sit looking at yourself all night?
Yeah.
As opposed to a painting?
Yeah, but at least that changes each day.
No, it doesn't.
It does, the picture
changes. No, it's not. It's round and miserable. Every fucking day.
No, honestly. It's good to... Because you don't look at yourself otherwise. Especially me. I haven't got any hair to comb or anything. So I don't look in the mirror as much as the normal person. So, whereas now, I'm looking there every day.
So you're sat at home staring at yourself?
No, because the telly's in front of the mirror.
But are you not distracted by yourself?
Yeah, you do. When the adverts are on, you look up. And if Suzanne's sat next to me, I tend to talk to her through the mirror.
What do you mean? So, why don't you look at her when you talk to her?
Well, you don't have to turn your neck or anything. There's no neck usage going on. I can just look forward. I look at the telly, lift the eyes up, look in the mirror, look at me, look at her.
What does she do?
Look back at you in the mirror. There's nothing wrong with that. It's like there's more people in the room in a way. It's like,
and they're further away.
There's nothing odd about that. Why wouldn't you use... It doesn't matter.
Why wouldn't you talk to your girlfriend via a mirror all the time? Is that your question?
Well, no, I think it's quite normal. If your head is facing a mirror where you can see everything in that room, remember, it's a small flat, I can see everything that's going on in there without moving my head. Stephen Hawking would be well happy. So I can look forward, she's sat next to me. If I'm watching the telly, I can say something. Now, she's getting the sound from me still because she's sat close.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're further away, but things look better from a distance anyway.
So that's how you've managed to keep this relationship alive,
maybe. You're such an odd little man.
But yeah. No, it's not odd. You see, there was a woman on the estate who did use... Have I told you about Miss Piggy before?
No.
It rings a bell. Go on.
I think I told you ages ago, it's this fat woman who used to be on the estate. She had a three-wheeler bike. And
what,
her husband.
Push bike, pedal bike?
Yeah, like a tricycle thingy, yeah. But a big one.
Right.
She used to sit her husband in the basket in the back. Cycle about, what have you.
Yeah.
She was known as Miss Piggy. Anyway.
Oh, is this the one that she used to beat him up so your dad pretended to be a policeman?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that's
the one, yeah. You remember?
No, I don't remember this.
Yeah, yeah. She used to always duff her husband up and that, and people in the area knew that she was being a bit tight on him. And my dad went round with his mate and sort of.
But what's this got to do with the mirror?
Anyway, well, the way she used to communicate, she used to always go in quicksave and nick biscuits. And if anyone went up to her to say, stop nicking the biscuits, she'd pull out, like, a little mirror out of a bag. And she'd look in it, but talk to you via the mirror.
Oh man!
What? So she's insane.
It's weird, isn't it?
It was really weird.
Like,
it used to scare me.
It's like a Salvador Dali painting. you exist in there.
Yeah. It's really, really.
So
weird.
Hang on. So she used to talk to people through the mirror because she was mental.
I couldn't sit, watch the telly, and look at me watching the telly in the mirror all night.
No,
that's
no.
Weird.
That would be really weird.
It's really weird, Carl.
I'd be very conscious of myself.
No, I think it gives you confidence in that. And if you are
gives you confidence.
Well, yeah, because you're seeing yourself more and you pick up what habits you do and stuff like that.
So what have you changed through your viewing of yourself?
I sort of grew a beard the other week, just something different to look at for a bit. And then you get sick of that. It's like a piece of art. Change that. Have a bit of a shave.
Can you see the back of the telly in the mirror?
A little bit, yeah. If the flat's a mess, it's a mess twice.
The earliest art, which we know, which we call cave paintings, they date back between 30 and 10,000 years BC. Even those people tried to brighten up their cave with a bit of art. So in many ways, they were more advanced than you.
Yeah, but they didn't have a big mirror. I mean, if you're living in a cave, let's face it, you're not going to go mad if your kids start drawing, doodling on the cave wall, are you? Doesn't matter.
Right.
Brighten it up. But they always did the same thing. It was always a yak, wasn't it?
Well,
it was always a yak.
Yeah, but they drew what they saw. I mean, yeah, I love the fact that 30,000 years ago they're being criticised for being a bit literal.
No, but surely if all you ever see when you step out the cave is a yak, do something different on the wall for when you get in.
What?
Why is it always a yak on every wall?
Is it always a yak?
It's always a yak. Whenever you see these Tom Robinson time team programmes...
Who's Tom Robinson?
He's the guy who did Motorway, isn't he?
Yeah, and a 70s singer-songwriter. Tony Robinson, you mean?
Tony Robinson. Whenever you see him digging around, they say, hold up everyone, get the brush, what's this? It's always a yak. Yet they pretend they're interested.
So you're saying that you wouldn't have... You'd have been... No, I'm not going to draw a yak, I just saw a yak outside.
This is what I'm saying to you about trends. One person has it, the next caveman goes, I'll have one of them on my wall. I'll do a yak. Why was there no one just doing something a bit different?
Well, it's not true. They did. It's not true. This thing about it's yak.
It's just in your own head.
The programmes I've seen... I've been to Pompeii, where they had doodling on the walls. And that was all, like, knobs, tits and arse.
Yeah.
All over the shop. Now, do that now. People go, that's a disgrace. Rub that out. Clean that. Get it down. Whereas now, if you see one in Pompeii, they go, oh, look at that. Look at the detail on that.
Well,
and
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. There's snobbery in art. It's the same knob. The knob has not changed.
Yeah, but I imagine in 50,000 years' time, if they dig up, you know, a cubicle and there's tits and arse, people take pictures of
it
again.
They won't be. This is the interesting thing with the way we live now. We're cleaning stuff up constantly now. There's no... almost no record of our time. Because we're getting rid of everything. We clean everything up. Everything's clean. Getting rid of rubbish. Recycling everything.
Well, that's a very good point. Is graffiti a valid art form?
Some of it is.
I think it is, yeah. I mean, we're not talking about the classic Spunkin' Dick, which is still... I mean, it's still great, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
if you see a lovely clean white wall and you see a spunking dick on it, you're going
to
laugh.
Always laugh. Do you add hair to the testicles when drawing the spunking dick?
A few. The testicles.
It's always clean. My testicles are always clean.
Really?
Yeah.
I put, you know, the four or five bristles sticking out straight.
See, I always thought that was a kind of common aversion.
Mine looks like, I don't mean my real one. I mean my,
Your illustrative. Yeah.
It looks like... Two gooseberries and Thunderbird 2.
Do you add much detail at the tip of the penis?
No, it's a straightforward. It's dissecting across, just a line across to show the helmet.
Yep.
Then one little line for the
do
eye.
Do you tend to keep the same number of droplets coming out? Droplets.
I do three, but I don't do the line. I actually do the little teardrop.
The little teardrop droplets. Of spunk. Yeah.
And that is the spunk and dick.
At school, it was referred to, and this may be specific to Bristol. It was referred to as the sacred. Just drawn a sacred.
Oh really?
I don't know where the origin of that was.
Some graffiti is funny. I saw one in London. It just said, "Rachel is a big-assed, big-chinned cunt." Now, I think Rachel's going to see that and know I'm the only big-assed, big-chinned cunt round here. I don't know how big her chin was.
Sure.
I think of her chin maybe looking like the arse.
Yeah.
It's like the big arse like that. Maybe she couldn't see the last part of it because the chin was in the way. Rachel is a and that's
now,
all
where
she
was this
see.
Graffiti written?
It was in near Centre Point.
So, do you think someone was so angry
with
Rachel?
Well, maybe Rachel nicked this woman's fella.
Right.
And she went out.
Yeah, and scrawled that.
Yeah.
In a lot of different places. I saw one that was something, I don't know, it was back in Bristol, it was something like, "Michael Peters is gay." And I always wondered if that was Michael Peters himself who was having trouble coming out of the closet.
Yeah.
And was just writing that in a number of different places. So that by the time he finally mentioned people, they went, "Oh yeah, I knew that anyway, I saw it in the toilet."
Sculptures. What do you think of sculptures? I mean, because that's something that really is getting into the 3D world there. No longer do you have to represent something as 3D. You can make something. You know, is it, you know, the statues are amazing, aren't they?
They're clever, aren't they? I mean, they always look the same.
Well, that's not true, is it? Because recently there was quite a controversial one, a huge one in London. The pregnant thalidomide woman. What do you think of that?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Thoughts?
I wouldn't have it in my house.
Well, there wouldn't be room, because it would just be you, Suzanne, and a pregnant thalidomide watching telly.
I don't know what he was trying to say. It's,
Maybe she was saying, okay, we've had the human form. This is an example of the human form.
Yeah, but do you think she started off trying to do normal, and it was like, oh, I've chipped a bit off?
One of the arms got chipped
off.
Well,
it makes you wonder, doesn't it? And why, you see that square, Trafalgar Square, you've got that. Nelson's Column, he's got one arm and a leg missing or something, and a patch over his eye. Then you've got the thalidomide. Why can't they just do a full person?
Whoa! That was what they saw. That was what the artist saw.
It's about confronting us with certain preconceptions of what we expect of the human form, what we expect of sculpture. It's probably a little ironic comment as well on the famous Rodin. It's wrapped up with all kinds of ideas of maternity, of the human form, of what sculpture is. Why wouldn't you put that in a big public place?
What about the subject? Did you think, who's that subject? Who is that woman?
No, not really, because the thalidomides are around and we've all seen one. It's not like a shocking image. It's one of life's little things that it chucks out. There's some out there. So
amazing.
It's not shocking, is it? I don't understand what you mean. I think what I thought is, it just goes to show we're sort of running out of ideas.
What do you think of people who are so angry at art, they try and censor it, or they try and destroy it? Do you think art should ever be censored?
It's where you put it. If it's in a gallery, then it doesn't have to be censored. If it's in Trafalgar Square, where everyone's wandering around having a nice time, you don't want a 12-foot cock. So it's all about where you put it. I think some art looks better because of where it is. Angel in the North, that's a bit of art, but it's a bit of a surprise, isn't it? You're driving along a miserable motorway.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that over there? It gives you something for your eyes to look at again. Motorways are the most boring place to drive.
Mm.
But you go, oh, look, there's a bit of art over there.
Yeah, but then again, should you be looking at art when you're going at 70 miles an hour along a motorway?
Well, yeah, because it's really big. You can keep your eye on it and
look in the mirror.
It's not a problem.
Wait till you go past it and look in the mirror like normal.
What's, so you like the Angel of the North?
Because it's something in the middle of nothing.
Right, but if you put it somewhere else?
Stick it in Trafalgar Square, you'd go, oh, more clutter.
Now, you've spoken Carl about, you know, art and what impact does it have, blah, blah, blah. And as Ricky's just pointed out, of course, in some instances, art has been considered incredibly controversial, very provocative, and has been banned. Famously, one thinks of the Nazis banning and burning certain books, not all of which were just books, you know, criticising them. It was often artistic works, things which they felt were subversive in some sense. And you get that in many repressive regimes, where people's artistic work is not allowed to express the way they feel about something. Stalinist Russia, for instance, art there, literature, are not able to express its views because people see it as dangerous, as provocative.
Well, yeah, the threat always comes from scholars, with, like, any dictatorship, you know, and they know that.
But not just scholars writing, you know, scholarly texts, criticisms, but also people expressing themselves through poetry, through creativity.
Well, yeah,
things which are not direct.
Yeah.
They can be abstract, and yet they can still be subversive.
Yeah, but I think if it's done in a way that isn't just like a lunatic, they get away with it. Like a nice poem, some people would see it, read it in a different light. I might read it and go, I don't even know what they're going on about there. So, as long as it's done clever, get away with it, don't they?
So well,
it
no,
makes the artist
the
better.
Case. But that's not often not the case, that's what I'm saying. Often, in these regimes, these things are repressed.
No, but there's always, like, code words and that you can use and they can't have you on it.
Such as?
I don't know. I'm not into that sort of work.
Right, well, so you've just made a statement there, but it's not backed up with any actual information.
No,
well,
there was a good point there. No, there was a very good point there. The McCarthy era, where he was threatened by communism infiltrating the country, and he thought that entertainers might be a part of that, the conspiracy. It was a hotbed, and he made everyone come forward, writers, actors, say they're not a communist, and some people were out in the cold, and so people had to be a bit clever. Like, was it Arthur Miller, the Crucible? It's a metaphor. It's about witch hunts, but it's about the McCarthyism. So yes, good point. You can put coded messages.
CB
into
radio
art.
Was the same thing.
Go on.
Well, it's all the codes. As long as
you've
got codes.
Okay, well, I thought you had I mean, I was trying to make your point sort of more valid than it obviously was.
No, but if you need to refer to CB radio, that's the obvious.
Well, that's what I can relate to.
Sure.
Yeah, we've done this. There's no point in CB radio. They go. How many candles are you burning? What? How old are you? 8. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's no point to those codes at all. You know.
So this is in no way. This is in no way relatable to the Crucible. Why would you be talking about one of the most respected plays of the 20th century, and suddenly this in your head reminds you of CB radio?
Just having this code going on that only certain people know
everyone,
how to break.
Everyone knew it.
No, it's
pointless.
Not back then, they didn't.
Pointless. I remember we were shown the cartoon version of Animal Farm when we were about like 15, 16. And we were discussing it afterwards about, communism versus, the poor proletariat and all this. And this bloke went, you lot make me sick. It was just a nice film about some animals.
Brilliant. Yeah. What's your take on that, Carl? No, go on, what's your point? Because you can see the irony there, can't you?
I haven't seen it.
No.
If you want to do a serious point, don't use animals.
No? Well, I disagree with that because we're going to get onto literature later, and I think my favourite is probably Charles Dickens, and I think the greatest story ever told is A Christmas Carol, and there's only one way that could ever be improved, and that is a Muppet Christmas
That's
Carol.
That's absolutely right, yeah.
So, and I think that you could, and I think people could take a lesson from that and maybe do other films with the Muppets. A Muppet Schindler's List.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You could make it so moving, couldn't you?
Schindler's List in space! Yeah. Well, I think it would certainly help bring that story to a wider audience.
I think so, yeah.
A lot of people who are, like Carl, who were put off perhaps by the depressing black and white of it, they would suddenly see the Muppets singing and dancing.
Miss Piggy's Choice.
Miss Piggy's Choice, yeah.
Well, we talked about that.
What?
About things like that in art as well. Do you think that bringing something so serious to the masses, like films do, things like the Holocaust and like Sophie's Choice, where she has to choose which child lives and dies.
Why did she have to pick?
Well, because the Nazis were horrible, nasty, evil people.
And which one did she pick?
I don't think that's the point. I don't think that's the point.
This is
not a betting game.
No, but I imagine this is like Deal No Deal. It's kind of you're down to the last, down to the last two. Which one you're going to go for?
Oh God! But why did you ask? Which one did she choose? Because Even if he'd said the names, Robert and Alison, what difference would it make? You don't know the story. Why is
no,
it
because
that
then I'd ask more. I'd ask more then. If he said Alison, I'd go, what was it with Alison? That, what did she have over Robert? That's what films are meant to do. You question it. Whenever I watch a film with Suzanne, I always say at the end, what was going on there?
Oh, that's because
Jesus
you're an idiot.
Christ!
That's because you've just watched Muppet Christmas Carol and you can't understand why a frog's able to talk.
I'm all for films with a good storyline.
Yeah?
Brilliant. That's a perfect point. One extraordinary point.
He's gonna follow this up, mate. He's gonna follow this up.
He's got something here. He's got something here.
Carl, go on then. What's your take on films?
Films are really good. You can get lost in them.
Right.
And,
you like one with a good story?
I mean, whenever anyone asks, it's always the same. It's Elephant Man. It's Kez. Mission Impossible 2.
Mission Impossible 2. These are what you consider great works of film.
No, I'm just saying these are ones that I've enjoyed recently. There's so many films that I haven't seen, yet you always say, oh, have you seen so-and-so? You
what, Mission Impossible 1?
And there's good news for you. Three's out.
That's true. One of the most striking art exhibitions that I ever attended, Carl, was an exhibition of outsider art. Something I'm sure you're very familiar with. Outsider art, of course, is work that is made by people who are often institutionalised for mental health problems, or they are just incredibly, you know, the people who aren't in any way part of the art establishment.
Well, they're right up to psychopathic murderers. Clinically insane mass murderers would count as outsider art. I went to an outsider art exhibition in New York. It was incredible. And I bought a painting of this guy. He's a chronic schizophrenic. And he paints in tar, like road tar, that he gets from roads. And he paints in that on wood he finds in sort of skips. And it's incredible because it's sort of like scratched in. And it's amazing. And there's this thing of Jesus being helped down off the cross. And you have to study it, but it's there and it's quite incredible that it's just scratched in this wood by tar. And there's loads of things that I was walking around. Admittedly, I was walking around there going, this is fucking mental. And James was going, you've got to stop saying that. Because, of course, some of the people are. Mental. There was one bloke doing a sculpture of a skull, right? And underneath, it was like a little head with his teeth. Underneath, he'd put a sign that said real teeth. Where did he get the real teeth from?
What I think is interesting about that is how much therapy it provides for these often mentally unstable people. Which is another important value of art, of course. People, self-expression, people being able to give a little piece of themselves through their work. Do you not see any value in that? How do you express yourself?
Whistle.
You whistle.
Yeah, I found over Christmas I whistled a lot more than I usually do. And I think that was just freedom.
What do you mean freedom?
Right. Freedom. Expand on this point, if you would.
Well, that's what art is, isn't it? It's you being free of all the world's heaviness on your shoulders.
See, that's a great quote, that. That's great, that. For art is freedom. I love that, because I think you've really hit on something there.
Would you include the free of all the world's heaviness?
Well, I know what you meant. I know what you meant there.
Would you include that one in it?
I mean, I would include the world's heaviness in my freedom. You know, some artists are attracted to the dark side, the heaviness of the world.
But I just want to return to you whistling as your artistic expression of freedom. I mean, why did you find yourself whistling more?
That's what was weird.
So just take us through the day. When would the whistling begin?
So this was that you spent Christmas down in Kent with Suzanne and her parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could I suggest something? Your freedom was thinking, I'm in my own place now, I'm going to annoy them.
Well, it was mainly, it's when we were playing Scrabble. And they were taking ages to have their go, and couldn't have the radio on because the boiler affects the radio. It works, it just gives something off. Every time it kicks in, the radio goes all staticky.
Right.
So I just was sort of supplying the soundtrack.
I think you've really hit on something there.
Would you include the free of all the world's heaviness?
Well, I know what you meant. I know what you meant there.
Would you include that one in it?
I mean, I would include the world's heaviness in my freedom. You know, some artists are attracted to the dark side, the heaviness of the world.
But I just want to return to you whistling as your artistic expression of freedom. I mean, why did you find yourself whistling more?
That's what was weird.
So, just take us through a typical day. When would the whistling begin?
So, you spent Christmas down in Kent with Suzanne and her parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could I suggest something? Your freedom was thinking, I'm in my own place now, I'm gonna annoy them.
Well, it was mainly, it's when we were playing Scrabble.
Mm.
And they were taking ages to have their go, and, couldn't have the radio on because the boiler affects the radio.
You've got boiler problems down in Kent as well.
It works, it just gives something off. Every time it kicks in, the radio goes all staticky.
Right.
So I just was sort of supplying the soundtrack.
And what kind of things would you be whistling?
It was like, I just sort of did a whistle medley.
Mm.
It was going from one thing to another.
A wedley?
And a man was impressed. She was like, oh, you can whistle, can't you? I was going, yeah. And then she was saying, how loud can you go? I was just doing all different levels.
Sorry, this sounds like a scene from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The boiler's setting off the radio. I can whistle. Oh, you're good whistling, aren't you? Oh, yes, grab out. Talk about outsider art.
I love the fact that Carl's life is like living in a home.
It is.
When you're in your 80s.
Yeah.
But you felt that this was your way of expressing yourself.
I just found it odd, because I don't whistle that much. I think I'm fed up most of the time when I'm in London.
Mm.
And you never get, you don't whistle when you're fed up, do you? Whistling's a happy thing.
Mm.
You never get an angry man suddenly breaking into a
whistle. The people who aren't whistling are usually pissed off. But yeah, the bloke is whistling. It's like, it's the least, he's the least annoyed person in the room when someone's whistling. Same as holding a drill. The only person that noise doesn't annoy is the bloke who's drilling. Everyone else wants to bunch his face in. Same with whistling. Whistling, there's no point in whistling.
No, there is.
No, there's not. The only point to whistling is in a bloke's changing room, everyone's whistling, going, I'm not looking at your cock. If I'm whistling, I can't be looking at your cock. Anything else, there's no, calling a dog, maybe. Calling a dog.
It changes the atmosphere.
Yeah, it annoys everyone else.
Dunno. I mean, our window cleaner was known as like, you know, that's how you knew he was there. He always whistled. And in the end, he fell off his ladder, broke his front teeth.
Oh.
Retired.
What, because he couldn't whistle?
That was it. It was like,
well, yeah, he whistled all the time.
Can't whistle, can't clean windows. It's a bit tragic.
Could he take along a whistle? Just pop that in his mouth?
Yeah, I suppose he could have done. I didn't think of that.
What about a flute? Or a recorder? Not London's burning again. Fucking clean the windows and then fuck off.
He didn't really think this through, did he? He retired at the age of 28.
Yeah.
And his whole family were bankrupt.
With no teeth.
Yeah.
And just a bucket and a squeegee.
Why are you working, Dad? Because I can't whistle.
I can't whistle anymore. And if the day you give up whistling is the day I give up window cleaning.
So you never whistle?
No.
I can't really whistle very well. No.
I don't whistle, but I can whistle better than that.
What, you did this for hours on end while playing Scrabble?
About 2 hours.
Fucking 2 hours? Hell.
Put my word down.
Can we just hear that again? Just hear, can we hear it?
So you were whistling after you had your go as well?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, Carl.
But hang on, let's just hear a bit. That is Carl's self-expression. That is his artistic self-expression right there.
A name. No tune, no nothing.
There's mental patients who have smeared canvases with shit who have expressed more than you have in that.
Yeah, but it's not about other people. I'm not there to please other people.
Right. You're there to annoy them.
What was the best word you came up with in Scrabble?
Don't knock me at Scrabble, because I do all right. What's weird is, when I play Scrabble, my brain can come up with words that I don't normally say.
Okay, this isn't... No, I'm intrigued here. Your brain can come up with words you wouldn't normally say.
Just words that I'd never drop into a sentence.
Tree, cat.
Go on.
Squirm. That's using a Q. It's worth 10, Matt. It's not bad, is it? Now, I'd never say that.
I don't think I've ever heard you say squirm, no. I don't think you're right, Carl. I've never heard you say squirm.
Weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is weird.
And yet your brain popped that one out.
And then, yeah, when it wasn't my go, just...
God, Christ.
Anyway, so that's sort of doing art for yourself as opposed for other people.
I don't think you can count what you just did then as art. Hobby, maybe, craft, pastime. I don't think you can count that as art. I'm not being funny. I'm being a bit snobby here. But I think there's a difference between Beethoven and...
Squirm. There's a cue in that. No. Classical music. I wish I was more educated on classical music. That which I've heard, I've adored. Mm. I genuinely find it challenging because it is so spectacular. It is so of another place. Where do you sit with classical music?
It's good. It's good for background, I think. See, I, you know me, I like a song with a story, and there's nothing going on in them. That's,
Now, the problem with that is, how many times can you hear the same story?
Quite a lot. How many times can you watch the same film? Same thing, except it's shorter than watching a film.
Yeah, but the film goes into the story with more depth than a 3-minute song.
Yeah, but there's also, do you know, like, when you watch, what's an example? Say, I can't think of a film.
Yeah, there's not many.
No, but a moment in a film that, it doesn't matter how many times you watch it, you go, I enjoyed that bit.
Godfather swings to
mind. Well, say, no, over Christmas, On the Buses was on the movie.
Jesus.
You went with The Godfather, you went with On the Buses. I mean, oh, God. Brando, Varney, I don't know which is better.
It was the bit where, like, the toilet blows up after chucking a fag in. That's had paint in it.
Right. Sorry, that's in All the Buses. That's not in The Godfather. I can't remember that. Maybe that's Godfather 2.
The thing is, I enjoyed that bit and I knew it was coming. It's like, oh, I'll just watch this before I nip out and put the kettle on. Mm. Let's just see this.
How many times have you seen the On the Buses film?
Probably about 4 or 5 times.
Jesus. Sure, why not?
But all I'm saying is, music is there to sing over.
No, it's not!
Music is there to sing over.
That's a ridiculous thing to say. Music does something to me. I don't know what it is. I don't know why a chord can say something to you. I don't know, mate. Gives you that feeling. I'm in awe of it. I'm in awe of musicians.
Yeah.
My favourite piece of music is a thing by Vaughan Williams. It's 5 variants of Dives and Lazarus, right? And there's a bit there where it hits this chord and I can't listen to it when I'm away from home because I well up. It reminds me of everything. England, just, it does something to me. And it does it on a level that I can't sort of quite understand. It's just immaculate.
I just don't think you can beat a decent vocal on top of that.
Oh, that's amazing!
My mum's got a CD of Roger Whittaker, right?
Right, whistling again.
Now, he whistles Jealous Guy. Now, the thing is, I can't listen to that and whistle along. I end up singing Jealous Guy on top of it.
So, singing trumps whistling?
Yeah, when someone else is doing the whistling.
Okay.
I like whistling, but if someone else has did that first...
Yeah. So if Roger was singing Jealous Guy, you'd be whistling.
I'd probably whistling it. To make the classics live on, I'm surprised someone hasn't gone, I can add to this, and dub on a bit of vocal.
So you would have classical music with lyrics?
Just for people
Beethoven's
who want
Fifth.
That.
Beethoven's Fifth. That would be better to you. That would...
But what are you meant to do with it? What do you do? When you've got that on, then, do you whistle along? Or
no,
do
I don't whistle along.
Hum?
I let it. Oh,
do you whistle along?
I just don't know what to say.
Why are you obliged to whistle? That's the only way you can enjoy music, if you can whistle along.
Well, that's the same with anything. A good song, you join in, don't you? It's like, oh, I like this one.
Yeah. No.
So, by that token, YMCA is one of the greatest of all tunes.
I mean, it's not one of my favourites, but you can't knock it. It certainly gets the crowd up. When, I mean, I did DJing. And
why do you care about the crowd?
Popular.
Who are this crowd?
Well, I'm just saying.
Who are this crowd that you have to live in your head with? Fuck the crowd. Most of them are idiots.
Although, admittedly, if I was doing a wedding DJing set, I probably would do YMCA over Vaughan Williams.
And why is that? Because it's happier-go-lucky. It's done in 3 minutes. Classical music goes on for ages.
Mm. That's a good point.
Who's got time?
It fades out, it comes back in again. Well,
it's a good point.
It's all over the shop.
Are you going or are you staying?
It's over time. And I'm not saying we should get rid of it. And I might grow into it, because I think that's music for older people.
Well, I think Mozart would disagree. I think he did his first symphony when he was 5 or 6. Probably playing piano and writing music before you could read.
When... did the piano come out when he was a kid?
What do you mean?
If it was trendy to have a piano when he was a kid, it's like how kids now... they're messing about on Google at the age of 2. Because the laptop is new. It's new to us. To them, it's like, oh, it's Google, isn't it?
What's your point?
Because he was born at the right time.
Beethoven.
Yeah, he was born.
No, Mozart. So you're saying that all 3-year-olds around the time of Mozart were brilliant?
There would have been quite a lot of them. Mozart, Beethoven, all that. They're all, Handel. They're all around the same time, aren't they?
Just guessing. Wild stabs in the dark. Just names he's heard. Just names he's heard. So when Ricky was young, when Ross Harris's stylophone came out, everyone was composing on the stylophone,
yeah, exactly.
It's all what you brought up with, isn't it? Nothing's hard if you're given it when you're a kid. Nothing's difficult.
Mm.
It can be taught all sorts. I haven't got room for a piano. It's too big for a pastime. A hobby shouldn't take up a whole corner of a room.
It's so limited, isn't it? His scope, his imagination.
Yeah. But a piano, the idea that a piano in a house would be a frustration and annoyance.
Music.
That you could play
harmony.
But I'd worry about annoying other people with it.
No, you don't. You whistle when you're playing Scrabble. You don't worry about annoying people at all. I'm sure people would rather have gentle piano music in the background than... Squirm. Squirm. So, one of the earliest and most celebrated art forms that's, you know, along with painting and music still going today, is the play. And, of course, the most famous and celebrated exponent of that is our very own William Shakespeare. Some say maybe the greatest literary genius in history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan.
Right.
And I'll tell you why I'm not a fan. One reason and one reason only.
Sure.
Nothing to do with the structure, his themes, fantastic. The pun.
Right.
Oh, I can't stand the pun.
Yeah, but I mean, although Shakespeare did include a few puns in his work, I don't think you could...
No, I suppose it's the people that have taken on the pun. It just reminds me of a bloke in a beard and a pipe at a party doing puns, you know. And it's things like Shakespeare, things like, oh, take their maidenheads. And you have to look at your Brodie's notes to go, okay, cut off their heads and take their virginity. Oh, brilliant. You know, you can't, it's like, you can't explain a joke in retrospect. You don't laugh if you then explain to you.
I'm going to have to take issue with the idea that Shakespeare was not a truly great master of our language.
I think he was.
If you listen to
the language, he invented words, or at least he stole words and changed them, but he took them from, you know, other languages, which is totally valid. And he made up loads of sayings that are still around today, and there's a poetry in that, inventing new... actually, Carl, you like sayings, don't you? I've got a list here of some of the sayings and phrases that Shakespeare made up, really. In a pickle. Was his?
Yeah.
And we know what in a pickle means.
Yeah, we know what it means. It's a saying I'd never use. Because when you're in a pickle, it's not something that you would say.
No, if you're captured and you're being tortured for information,
yeah,
you wouldn't, and you get access to a phone, you wouldn't call, go, MI5, I'm in a pickle.
Mm.
You'd be screaming, going, he's taking my teeth out.
Much as I love Shakespeare, is when that play was first staged and someone said during the play, ooh, I'm in a pickle, did the audience understand or were they baffled?
Or was it like watching Ken Dodd when he goes, yumbunctious?
Exactly.
Oh, totally hilarious.
Yeah.
So Shakespeare is about as good as Ken Dodd.
That's what we appear to have established. While you've been talking about that, I just was looking on the computer at the Pun of the Day website, because I feel like I take much of what you say about puns and agree with it. There's a couple that you might like. There was a sign on the lawn at a drug rehab centre that said, keep off the grass.
Okay, now if the pun is the lowest form of wit, and let's face it, sarcasm isn't, sarcasm is up there compared to the pun, then the drug pun, I think, is one of the lowest of the low. Oh, people who congratulate themselves on getting drug references, keep off the grass, will you? Grass, get it? Grass, you know, smoking the grass, yeah.
Show me a piano falling down a mineshaft, and I'll show
a flat
you
minor.
A flat minor.
Oh, God. Okay, good. Okay.
Do you get that?
Well, these are, I mean, that sums up puns, isn't it? It's things that kids get in a cracker. I think pun should be short for punch him in the mouth.
Idioms are better.
Go on then, what's an idiom? Is that a new word you made up?
No,
Carl Pilkington's a complete idiom.
Yeah. I found out what it was because I thought, oh, I like them, what are they?
Right.
And it's like little sayings.
Yeah, that's right.
That's some stuff up.
Go on, give us an example of your favourite.
Oh, can I just say one, talking about sayings, Carl was getting fed up with summer. He was fed up with not getting replies from something. He's having a hard time, you know. And I went, oh, the worm has turned. He went, What? Oh, the worm has turned. You know, you've...
Stupid saying, isn't it?
No, okay, tell him why you think that's a stupid saying.
Because how do you know when a worm's turned? Of right. All the creatures that you could flip over and know it's turned, why pick a worm? It's a bad... It's the worst thing they could have picked to express something turning.
But you're turning literally. It means changing, doesn't it? Changing your attitude. A new broom, turning over a new leaf.
Yeah, but
things are
going to
be different now and I'm sick of it.
Chameleon.
No, but
chameleon is a brilliant thing to use for something to change.
Oh.
Chuck that in the sentence. There's nothing that you can link a worm to human life to. You're talking about something that's... It's blind, isn't it? It's blind, it's deaf.
Gay.
It's got no features.
Why is he having such a go at a worm?
Just because it's a weird thing to use. Something that... Its arse is more... It does more than its head.
That could be said of you, Carl, to be fair.
We've talked about what art is, we've talked about painting, sculpture, we've talked about music briefly, we've talked about whistling over music to make it better. Poetry, a completely different type of art form there. Carl, what's your thoughts on poetry?
I've never really been a fan of it.
It's a surprise.
I think it's sort of, it's all right for the person who's doing it. You know, you say that whistling is just for the whistler. But I think poetry is more like that, because sometimes you read it and you're thinking, what's he going on about? It's always a bit, I don't know, it's sold in a bad light. It's a bit sort of, a bit gay, isn't it?
Right.
Okay. I mean, it depends what sort you're talking about, because maybe there's poetry out there that I haven't heard.
There's some poetry gayer than others.
Yeah.
War poetry can't be gay, can it? That was people...
I haven't heard. Go on.
People fighting in the trenches and... They can't be gay. They weren't gay. They were writing to their sweetheart. I don't know his name. It might have been a bloke. I don't know. But
so was it a sort of a, what sort of poem was it? Was it a sort of a limerick? Sort of a like,
no. It
light?
Was. It was. Well, there's famous ones: Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon, and they're very moving. They're about, you know, what usually happens is that they talk about why are we here. This is, you know, we've been sold a lie here, you know, and they really started seeing war in a different light from their point of view in the trenches. Famously, some of them died soon after the, you know.
But I prefer a proper letter. No sort of crypticness. That's the problem with
right.
poems.
Okay, so you'd have been disappointed to get Dolce et Decorum Est through the post, would you? You'd have just said, what are you trying to say, mate? What's the weather like? When you're coming home? Did you get my socks?
Well, yeah, sometimes life is a bit like that, and it's like, say what you mean.
Right. Well, that's well. Then you have just wiped all art off the face of the earth if you literally just say what you mean.
No, I'm just saying in a letter. Say if I was a woman and me fella was fighting in a war.
Right. What's your fella's name?
Harry.
Okay, so Harry. Oh, that's right. So when were you married?
About 1935.
1935. So you've been married about 4 years,
yeah.
Harry. Why don't you go off? Oh, you're a woman, aren't you?
Yeah.
You don't. Okay. So what did you see in Harry? Why did you like Harry? Was he?
He just was like funny.
Butch.
He wasn't that butch, but that
no.
didn't matter back then, did it? In the war.
No. And you.
He took everyone.
But what did you say when Harry was said to you?
Well, I thought it was coming because a lot of our friends
right.
ended up having.
Did
to
you
go
just
there.
Hug him and say don't go or something?
No point, because that would have just made it tough for him. So I just, what's the point? Just go with it.
But if he
I
had
cried
written,
after he went.
You cried after he went.
That's what you do, innit? You wouldn't do it in front of him. He's got to go to battle.
Okay, so your man goes off to battle.
Right. Then I get a letter from the colonel
right.
saying, "Oh, bit of bad news. Harry's dead." Now I get a letter in the post.
He said what he meant, didn't he? In the
Well, yeah, and they would do, wouldn't they? They wouldn't yeah. fanny around saying, oh, he was on the warpath and the cloud went dark. I go, what? Just tell me what happened. I don't want a weather forecast.
He got shot at the arse and the bullet came out his head.
Right. Now, the colonel, he would just tell me the basics. Now, because he sent his by,
Telegram.
They sent a telegram.
Mm.
The letter I get from Harry has been stamped, so I get it late.
Oh, right? Okay.
So I get a letter from Harry after he's died.
Yeah. Right, and you know he's dead.
I know he's dead, so I get right. this letter with his handwriting on. I'm yeah. devastated because I was just getting over his death.
Yeah.
It's all brought back to me when this letter drops through the post.
Well, yeah, three right. days and you're pretty much over it.
He's had yeah. his handwriting.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what's this?
What's
now
he
I
written?
Open it.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, things are bad here, socks are damp, you know, everything's grim, it's cold, I'm sick of it, there's a poem. It wouldn't feel like it was from Harry.
Well,
because it's not in his words. Poems are never in the person's words.
But did you know Harry was a poet when you married him and made love to him
no,
that
I only
night?
No, I picked it up because other people were doing it. Something to do in the trenches.
But when he carried you over the threshold, Carl, and he laid you down and gently kissed you, didn't he say any? Didn't he ever?
He must have whispered some sweet nothings into
no,
your spherical
like
red
that.
Head.
No, like that, straight to the point. He was like, "Get your knickers off."
That's one of the weirdest fucking scenarios I've ever heard! What the fuck was the telegram coming before the letter? So specific! It wasn't like Harry, the fuck's Harry! Oh God! Oh God! Oh God! There are a few things gayer than poetry, though. I want to throw one into the pot. The continental breakfast.
Oh.
The continental breakfast. Yeah. That annoys me when I see it. Who orders that? If you've got the choice of eggs, beans, burger,
sausage.
Chips, sausages,
bacon.
All that, you've paid for it already. If I was a waiter and someone said, what do you want for breakfast, mate? And the bloke went, oh, I just have a little bit of grapefruit juice and a croissant. I go, do you? Do you want some cum on that? Yeah. Or you can go back to the hotel and suck a cock.
Yeah.
So,
no, I'm with you there.
What else is, what else is gayer than poetry? I remember when I was at school once, right? The worst thing you could be growing up was gay.
Yeah.
In school. It was the worst thing. It was the, you know. And, I remember I was about 14, 15, I was talking to this bloke, I talk about him on my stand-up, David Beasley. He's the one that said if you get captured by cannibals, they show you pornographic pictures when you're in the pot, so you get an erection and there's more meat to go around. So he was an idiot. He made Carl look smart.
Wow.
Really.
Wow.
He said, you know that thing that kids always do, what would you rather be, blind or deaf?
Yeah.
We did that, and we discussed that for a while, and he went, what would you rather be, blind or queer?
Mm.
And I went, well, I'd rather be gay, because...
Still got all your sights, yeah.
And he went, oh, would you? I went, well, yeah. Well, rather than be blind? I said, yeah. I said, also, if you were gay, you'd like being gay. He went, I wouldn't. I went, no, you would. I said, if you were gay, you would like being gay. He went, I wouldn't, Gervais. Sounds like you would. I went, well, if I was gay, I would like being gay. He went, well, I wouldn't. And he looked at me accusingly, and I went, no, nor would I, but gays would. Which made no sense at all.
Right, yeah.
Just
yeah,
the idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is just like such a stonewall that I'd rather be anything than gay.
Yeah.
Carl, thoughts? Blind or gay?
This is about art, is it?
So there you have it, our comprehensive and definitive guide to the arts. Next in this series is philosophy.
Well, I'm looking forward to that one enormously, Rick, because, of course, you have a honours degree from the University of London in philosophy.
Yes, but I predict that that one will also be as big a load of bollocks as all the others we've done. Thank you.
Just to remind you that you can still get the Ricky Gervais Guide to Medicine, the Ricky Gervais Guide to Natural History, and now, of course, the Ricky Gervais Guide to the Arts.